This is an official warning. You have no rights, and there is no law.
How do you know when your case is fixed? Do you think you've been through family court hell? Imagine you get a judgment signed by the judge saying that the house is your sole and separate property, but then they don't let you file it, so you can't enforce it. And imagine when you keep litigating, you keep trying to get what's yours, and a new judge says that if you don't stop, he's going to take your children away from you and put them in foster care. What then? Huh? What then? Hello, world. I am Alexander C. Baker, J.D. That's right. I'm an expert in the law that is alleged to exist. It is March 17, 2024. Today on Freedom Enough, number 61, how to tell when your case is fixed. My guest today is Christy Black. And she doesn't have to imagine these bizarre things. Hi, Christy. You don't have to imagine these bizarre things because that and a whole lot more has actually gone down in your case. How are you doing today?
I'm doing swell.
All right. Swell it is. Well, I'm doing just fine, too. And you know what? Both of us are lying, aren't we? We're lying about that. This is the new normal, right? This is the new good, what we're dealing with. So, I know a lot about your case, of course. You and I are friends, and we do stuff together. We work together and all that. So, but take me back to like the end of your marriage, and just a little tiny bit about that, and then we'll get to June of 2016, where this document gets entered into. Tell us what this is, what's going on, and what's this about here in June?
Will do. So I'll give you a little bit of background. Once upon a time, some 22 years ago, I had the unfortunate event of kissing a poisonous frog. And that's going to be a recurring theme here. So, and we're going to step back for a second because we're going to eventually step forward and review a document that speaks to what I just said. And this can happen to any of us, all of us. You can wind up, you know, meeting somebody that you think is your friend, kind of like a lot of the scumbag attorneys out there. And so once upon a time, some 22 years ago, I met this poisonous frog, I kissed him, I became intoxicated, sick, and I went on to marry this person. Now, it's actually kind of relevant because it's brought up later in this case. And what happened was I met somebody that I really didn't want to be with. I told them I didn't want to be with them, and they would threaten me that they'd commit suicide and all sorts of things. I even moved away to another state to get away from this person. Their suicide threats accelerated. I then, in an attempt to avoid somebody hurting themselves, I moved back, certain that I could convince them not to be with me and that it would be over. I was then pressured in a very short period of time, something like maybe from the time I met him to the time I married him, like 9 months. And even on the day of my wedding, I was crying and I didn't know what to do. So I wound up staying married to this person. It's kind of almost unbelievable, but for 12 years. Wow. And it was, you know, in order to avoid threats or anything, I did everything in like conflict avoidance. And the reality is a lot of, you know, you guys out there probably did the same. And it's like boiling a frog. And my case is also a lot like boiling a frog. And when somebody makes the determination that they're going to own you, whether it's your government or a business partner or a romantic relationship. If you are a giver, you got to be really careful because takers know no limits. So what happened was I thought I was going to get divorced by way of almost like a mediation. You know, he moved out and like moved into like some like douchebag, like a, you know, bachelor pad, like where there's like, I don't know, at a place called Corona Del Mar, where I think the only thing you do is get drunk and you live there so you can walk home. And I was like, okay, like have fun. And I just thought like, okay, I'm going to give him this and then we'll be done. My parents offered him a wire to just leave me alone. And I thought like, okay, he's going to get this fat check and he's going to like leave me alone and like we'll be done.
Really? Your parents said, we'll pay you to go away and leave our daughter alone. It was like, wow. Okay.
My dad offered a very large sum of money to just leave me alone. Like it was going to be a wire, you know? And I, even when I heard the number, I was like, are you crazy? And he's like, Christy, he's like, this man's going to kill you and I don't want him to kill you. And so, it didn't work is how that story ends. So my ex declines it and the war begins. He, stops working and, you know, starts telling me I had a very good career, that I'd be paying him, that me and my, you know, like my children are going to wind up living in some shithole and he's going to take everything. And at the time I didn't understand that that was even possible. I thought like that you go to court and there's this like benevolent judge that would like make everything right. And
of course,
you know, make everything fair.
Yeah.
And,
with freedom and justice for all. Right.
Yes. And so, yeah. And so I did everything I could to make the person happy, or so I thought. And I had this like really nice attorney. And then she was like, dude, she's like, you told me that we were going to like mediate and you were just going to give him like all this stuff and like you'd be done. And she's like, you're never going to be done with this guy. She's like, I'm not a good attorney for you. You need to talk to this other attorney. He's a total dick and he's just like your ex. So he can help you. And I'm like, okay. And so lo and behold, I got this dick of an attorney. And he was like, he like that movie Elf where like the little evil midget guy that like attacks people that writes the books, like my attorney was like that. And so I met my attorney and he was a real dick. It was kind of great because he was like this miniature man who would like make my ex cry and stuff, which was like kind of fun. And then he said,
can we see how you are? Come on. All right.
He would make him cry in depositions, though, catching him in lies. And it was like kind of funny because like a deposition is just like really nothing other than like psychological warfare. So he'd like make him cry catching him in lies. And then my attorney said,
and wait, let me guess. And then when you catch the other side lying in family court, then the judge comes down on him, right? And they find him, you know, with perjury and it, right? Isn't that what happened?
Then you find them canoodling on a couch somewhere, looking at kitty porn together. But so what happens next is my attorney tells me, he's like, Christy, he's like, this guy is nuts and he is never, ever, ever going to leave you alone. So here's what I suggest. Give him 50-50 with the kids. Give him more than half. Agree to no child support, no spousal support. Like, you're never going to get rid of this guy. And I remember he looked at me and he said, you will be my client for life otherwise. And I thought, like, okay, I'll listen to you. So I entered into this thing called a marital settlement agreement where I gave my ex-husband 50-50, even though he was living in, like, this skanky bachelor pad and I didn't know where he was going to put my three beautiful, precious children. Like, well, what is he going to do with them? And so I was even so nice back then that I was like, well, Dustin, since you like live in this like douchebag den, like you can just stay at my house while I'm traveling for work. And then, you know, you can be with the kids here, which wound up costing me all of my like jewelry and everything else. Cause then he stole everything from me. Everything that was precious or mine then got stolen when I was letting him like use the house that I had gotten. So that blew up in my face too.
You're trying to be nice. You're trying to be reasonable, right? 50-50, right? Equitable. Let's just move on. You move on with your life. I'll move on with my life. You can see the kids. Right? You're just trying to be reasonable, right?
Yeah, like I was doing really what my attorney said because it didn't reflect reality. Like there were times where my ex used to drink a lot. And he'd go on benders and just disappear for months at a time. And so I was just go do whatever you want. And then I did understand, that seeing kids isn't a fixed, 2 days and 3 days. Like his schedule needed flexibility. And, I had given him a whole bunch of other assets. And then I was keeping the house and all the debt. And at the time, there wasn't that much equity. The house had a structural defect to it. I was like, just take everything else so I could just be done, right? Start new. And he'd have cash. He could go do whatever the hell he wanted, blah, blah, blah. I didn't care. And so I entered into this thing called a marital settlement agreement in 2016. And I thought okay, it's going to be over. Now, what I didn't realize, and though my awesome dick attorney who supposedly understood the psychology of my ex-husband who wanted to own me for life, what we couldn't foresee was that when this, was signed, that is where my ex really went nuts. Things ratcheted up violently after this settlement agreement was
executed. let's look at this. So here it is. It's up on there, and it seems pretty clear to me. The family residence shall be awarded to wife, and that's you, right? Your wife. Okay.
I'm wife.
Now, I will point out, I happen to know, because I know this case, you gave up a lot. Okay, you gave up the right to spousal support. You gave up the right to, I know child support has gone up and down and around, but you gave up a reimbursement that you would have been entitled to for the down payment on the house. And there was other things too. There were other expenses and community expenses that you agreed to take on. So, and in exchange for that, you got the house. And I mean, I've seen the numbers and it's more or less equitable. It's more or less fair. But regardless, right, he agreed to it and you agreed to it and they signed it, right? So let me guess, you sign this and then you get the house and everybody moves on with their life and everything's fine, right? Is that what happened?
Well, sadly, not exactly. And the reason was this marital settlement agreement also only covered a person named Maximilian Black, which the brutal side of that was I had married a man named Dustin Zank. And a man named Dustin Zank, unbeknownst to me, even at the time of signing this marital settlement agreement, had a long and sordid history of a 587 felony count criminal history, ranging from drug trafficking, narcotics distribution, firearms possession, racketeering, money laundering. And he had worked for somebody who's kind of famous, if you will, infamous, a man named Sammy the Bull Gravano, who is credited with snitching on the John Gotti crime family. Sammy the Bull was best known for being the hitman. And in exchange for his testimony, Sammy the Bull got freedom for putting the Gotti family away. And I later came to find out that the reason Sammy the Bull did that is he said his family is so important to him, he wouldn't want to miss his children growing up. So he, went state's witness. He then became a drug dealer, and my ex was one of the top ecstasy drug traffickers, along with Sammy the Bull's son. And then my ex had gone state's witness on Sammy the Bull and his son.
You didn't know any of this was going on till later, right? Wasn't there a time, we're kind of skipping ahead, but wasn't there a time where sort of out of the blue, you were contacted by like a detective, right?
Yeah. So sometime in 2017, I want to say it was like August of 2017, I get a phone call from somebody who says, good day, this is Special Investigator Dave Melnick. And I'd like to talk to you because I'm a little bit worried about your safety. And I'm like, worried about my safety? I'm like,
that's not a good thing to hear on the other end of the phone, right? Hi, I'm a detective. I'm Detective so-and-so. And right, I just wanted to check on you and make sure that you're all right. I'm worried about your safety. But okay, have a nice night. Sleep well. What's like, wait, what? You know.
And so he says, well, as you might be aware, Sammy the Bull Gravano is set to be released in like some short period of time. And I'm like, uh-huh. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but I don't know who that is. Right. And then there's kind of this like awkward silence. And he's like, Miss Black. He calls me Miss Zank, forgive me. And he's like, Miss Zank. And I'm like, well, I'm no longer Miss Zank. I said, what is this about? And he said, aren't you aware that your ex-husband, Dustin Zank, did this, 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 and that? And I was like, what? And I had no idea what he was talking about. But what he did tell me was that my address was public, and that my ex-husband's identity of Dustin Zank, which was tied to the title of my home, is publicly available, and that my ex-husband, who during the course of my marriage, who had never explained to me this, 587 felony count, like I had no idea that he had changed his identity. And at the time that my ex-husband during the course of my marriage wanted to change his identity, it was extra weird. And here's why. My ex-husband was named Dustin Zank, and he said, I want to change my name because my name is difficult to say. And I'm thinking like, Dustin is like Dustin Hoffman, not very hard. It's not like Slavic Menschlovitz. It's like Dustin Zank. And it's like, it just sounds like, and I would always say, like, it sounds like bank with a Z. And people, always got it. So my name was Christy Zank. So when he came up with this plan, I was really annoyed because I had already had to change my name once. And I didn't even want to be married to him. And he forced me to like change my last name. So I was like doubly annoyed that I was going to have to like be another new last name. So he tells me, well, I'm going to change my name to Maximilian Elijah. And so he was hijacking my son's names, effectively making himself a junior of my son's. So it was like super weird. Yeah. And then the neighbors, like everybody's like, what the hell is going on? Like you like, hi, Dustin. And he would get really angry. Like, my name is Max. No, that's your son's name, sir. Like, what are you talking about? So in any case, that became an issue because when I got this stipulated agreement on dividing the house, it was formed to divide all my assets from a man named Maximilian Black. And at the time of the filing, my ex-husband never disclosed his previous identity, which would then later become a point of contention because I experienced a catastrophic slab leak in my house, causing, over $100,000 in damage.
We're going to get to that. So we'll get to that. So here's, mm-hmm. here's like, I think the next thing that happens after the stipulation that it says the house is awarded to you. Here is this, here's the stipulation that everybody needs to sign. And what he tries to do him with his slimy, with Dustin or Maximilian's slimy lawyer, Keith Dolnick, they try to handwrite in this term that wasn't there. This stipulation order does not affect, that should be affect, but whatever. Equalization payment owed to the petitioner, that's your ex, right? by you. The amount of equalization payment is still to be determined, right? So sometimes that is a thing that can be in a family law case, right? Where, you know, there needs to be a reimbursement, a set off, or just a, you know, a reimbursement that gets paid the other direction. But that was not the agreement here. I mean, we know this, right? Christy already gave up a lot in exchange for her
freedom.
No, in exchange for his half of the house, right? You're both getting your freedom. Come on now. So he tries to handwrite this in, right? So,
but wait, this is the 2019 stipulation that's dealing with the identities.
Is it? Okay. Well, yeah. Here, Justin Zank's legal name changed to Maximilian Black. It's like, you shouldn't really have to even litigate this stuff, right? I mean,
and you just and think, at the time, wait, it's even worse because we're litigating it 5 years into the matter.
Right. I mean, he wouldn't just, like, after you already signed this agreement, right, he wouldn't sign the house over to you, right?
And well, Dustin Zank wouldn't sign the house over, well, no, not Maximilian Black.
Nobody would, right? Nobody would sign, no name, no fictitious entity. Even Sammy the Bull Gravano didn't show up and sign the house. I mean, nobody showed up. And yeah, if you look at the stipulation, it doesn't specifically say that this creep is, you know, it says the house is awarded to her, sole and separate, but it doesn't actually say he needs to sign the deed over. Well, but of course he should. I mean, obviously that's implied in it, but the way the slimy lawyers wrote the thing, that wasn't in there. And of course it should have been. So you had to go back and then, okay, so here, number four, due to leaks at the residence, and this is in like October of 2019, I think, by now. Is that about right?
Yeah, this was December of 2019 because I had a flood in October of 2019. I was without running water from October, and also heat and walls that like exterior walls. So in this winter of 2019, I had no heat or water in my house, and I had to live here.
And so here's a clause that seems very, very interesting. It says, both parties agree that the insurance proceeds to repair the residence should be made payable to you and not to him and not to both, not to him or to both of you or any of that, right? So, okay, there's insurance on the house. Yay, you've got all this water damage. That's bad, but hey, at least you've got insurance. So you're going to get covered. You're going to get made whole. And that's the way it went down, right? The insurance just came through. You got the check and you fixed your house up. No problem, right? Is that what happened?
Nope. The stipulation isn't worth the paper that it's printed on.
Yeah. Both parties agree that the insurance proceeds, why would you have to go to court and get an order as to where the insurance proceeds? I'm like, what did he do to like interfere with the insurance situation?
So he tried to get the checks sent to him. He tried to, during the course of all this, I was incurring massive debt to the tens of thousands plus legal fees. And they were trying to basically bury me alive in a catastrophic hardship to then steal the house. That was like the whole plan, is to steal the house. So while the apes are, engaged in this conspiracy to economically destroy me, force me into debt, force me to pay for attorneys just to get the assets that are already mine, clouding my title, interfering with my insurance, trying to steal my insurance proceeds. My ex-husband also fabricates some allegations that I had tried, or I said I was going to kill him when I'm 80 or something. And so also during this time, they do an unnoticed ex-party and take two of my three children and ask that my eldest daughter be put in foster care.
Oh, man. So just to paint the picture, by this point in time, in late 2019, sliding into 2020, He's been out of the house, right? You live in the house. He's been out of the house for quite some time, right? He gets
it's
married
2013.
To since okay, and he eventually gets married to another woman, and he's in Texas, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, he got married to another woman in, I want to say, maybe 2020, because she got pregnant. Mm. So they had to get married and then move away and change their identity again.
Again. Interesting. Well, but, you know, it's okay, right? Because the courts are well-equipped to spot fraudulent conduct like this, right? And, you know, if the house is yours and he's interfering and all that, there's got to be something that they're going to do.
Especially like a second stipulation that clarifies that two of his identities shouldn't be doing what he does. And then, and additionally, the conclusion of that stipulation even agreed that if somebody doesn't comply with the terms, that civil and criminal penalties are available.
Can I get you? I'm sorry to interrupt. Can I get you to just move to your right
yes.
a little bit? You're just kind of.
Oh, forgive me. How about this?
That's perfect right in there. So, all right. So then what happens is you got to go back to court and do something that we affectionately in California know as the 664.4, which is it's basically a motion to get a judgment on and to enter a judgment on some particular issue. And that's what you had to do in 2020. So what were you trying to get this judgment to say, and did it work?
Yeah, so this judgment is a year after the flood. And the reason that date is relevant is my ex-husband and his attorney did everything they could to obstruct the payments of the insurance checks being issued to me. And what happened was the insurance carrier said, okay, well, now the time has elapsed and you can no longer make a claim. My ex-husband was continuing to alter my insurance, take my name off of it, put his on, and then steal additional money out of my bank account. Lots of things were going on. At this point, I had incurred probably $150,000 on top of the damage. It was just one nightmare after another. And when this motion came before the court, what happened was it's like the final exhaustion where even the court was like, wait a minute, you guys already have an agreement and he just won't abide by it. So then the court can say, all right, so like, let's say that you have, you know, two normal people and they go and they, you know, write a contract. And then let's say one of them then goes crazy and everybody was abiding, or, you know, in a magical world, everybody was abiding by the contract. But mm-hmm. then somebody goes crazy and says, I'm not going to abide by the contract. I'm going to do whatever the hell I want, which is kind of like what happened here. And then a judge says, no. In fact, you didn't. This isn't just a court order. You two monkeys agreed to this outside of the presence of any court, and you guys made a contract. Right. So it's like, you know, really simple stuff. Kind of like if I go buy a car and I say I'm going to pay a car dealer $500 a month, and then I want to be a scoundrel and say, hey, F you, I just want to keep the car and I'm not going to pay you the $500 a month. Somebody can take me to court to enforce a contract. So in a very simple way, I wanted... I kept having to make more efforts to enforce reality. So like I had a 2016 agreement and, you know, it wasn't being enforced. So then I had to refine it for 2019 and then he still wouldn't comply with the terms that he agreed to. So then I'd go before the judge and the judge says, all right, that's it. I see
and,
that.
And it looks agreed. And it looks like it worked. Okay. So I'll read this. Yeah. It's not very long. This is what the court, and this is now where this is Judge Sarmiento, which would end up being one of a number of judges, But here's what it says, okay? Respondent, that's you, Christy. Christy makes a compelling case for the application of a 664-6 in favor of the court recognizing the initial stipulation and order. You're absolutely right. A stipulation is a contract, and it gets analyzed under contract law, this stipulation and order did not include the handwritten additions, right? That stuff we just saw about him trying to weasel in something about an equalizer payment, right? Although petitioner's reply, that's Dustin Maximilian, whatever the hell his name is, relies on the fact that respondent's former attorney, Barron, apparently signed the altered stipulation containing the handwritten additions. Respondent's current attorney, Salisbury, points out some relevant contradictions, specifically paragraph 6. I mean, why should we even have to get into this nonsense? But whatever. Okay, but the petitioner argues he has an apparent insurable interest in the real property. However, the stipulation and order specifically states in the original language that he no longer holds an insurable interest in the real property, okay? So here's the ruling. Here it is. So we waited 3 years for now at this point, 3+. The court grants respondent's motion to enter judgment pursuant to the terms of 12-17-2019 stipulation. This is like the redo of the 2016 stipulation. It's the same thing. It says it's her sole and separate property, no insurable interest. It says, Dustin, get the hell out of here. You're done. Okay. right? So he grants it. Yay! All right. We finally got the judgment, right? It doesn't have the handwritten additional language. That stuff's out of there. And of course, you move for sanctions. You should. Absolutely, you should sanction this bastard and the attorneys and all these people, right? Nope, the court reserves jurisdiction over this issue pending further hearings. And folks, this is what they do, right? Over and over again, they say you're supposed to sanction the other side when they engage in what they call obstreperous litigation conduct, right? If they're just like this. Okay, signing a stipulation and then not abiding by it, okay? But no, they won't issue the sanctions. They put those off and they put those off and they put those off. And to me, it becomes obvious that the reason they put those off and put those off is because they want you to just keep fighting and keep litigating. But anyway, we got the order, right? We got the, and this is a judgment. This is a judgment, right? And it says right here at the bottom, look right here, the respondent is to file the judgment as ordered as soon as possible. So that's great. So you filed the judgment and everything was fine, right, Christy?
So I think we filed the judgment later the same day.
Right. That's as soon as possible. That's pretty good.
As soon as possible. And the judge won't accept it because we're incorporating the stipulations as they are, you know, because part of the grave concerns here were without the evidence of precisely what it said, that my lunatic ex-husband and his super evil and unethical and corrupt attorney would just be back at it, which is precisely what happened. We would go on to file 9 proposed judgments, never receiving objections from the other side.
And they just won't file them. Folks, I looked at this.
And then they also shredded some of them.
I mean, there was two in particular that I know of. One of them rejected the judgment and kicked it back, saying it's not proper to attach the stipulation, which that's just bullshit because the whole judgment is about the stipulation that they entered, right? So of course you've got to attach it because that's what has the terms that has now become a judgment, right? But they say, nope, it's improper to attach the stipulation to the back of this judgment. Then it got refiled again without the stipulation attached to it, and it got rejected because it did not. have the stipulation attached to it. This is just gaslighting. And it's fucking gaslighting. I mean, and it wasn't even those two. It was like file it and file it and file it over and over. They entered a judgment and they won't let her file it. Okay, so until it's filed, it's not a thing. All right, this is just absolutely freaking crazy making. This is how they go about trying to steal a house, which leads us to this document. What is this exactly, would you say?
So this document is, my ex-husband worked for a company by the name of Redfin. And in the capacity of an employee, he entered my home, which he clearly knew to be my sole and separate property, into a binding contract claiming that he is the owner, and he sold my house in a buy it now offer to his employer, and he would also get paid a commission. And he
That's balls. All right, not just to steal a house, but to get paid a commission on stealing a house. That's rich. Yes. That's rich.
Yes. And so, and then he also digitally executed my signature as Christy Zenk, who I am not.
Oh, forgery. We got forgery on this. Well, once you're like an ecstasy dealer for Sammy the Bull Gravano, what the hell's a little forgery, huh? You know?
So, yeah. So somewhere in this document is he pretends that I'm a person named Christy Zenk, and I clearly am not Christy Zenk. And during the course of this as well, he was concealing that he was yet another identity. Oh, there it is. There's the letter of intent where he agreed to it. Now the other thing that's
now he's Max Zenk trustee. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
There's a possibility that maybe he created a new trust and has been stealing my other assets, or God only knows. But I am not Christiane Zenk, and there is no Max Zenk that's a trustee. Like, it's just, your guess is as good as mine. But here is this, that it's acknowledgement that you'd like to proceed. So this isn't just like, he didn't just like list my house on the MLS. He was living in Texas while working inside of Redfin from a Redfin device. He used his company, and his company is complicit in every respect for allowing this fraud to go on and to continue to employ somebody who did this. I sought to remedy it with their legal counsel. They were just a bunch of scumbags and provided precisely no help. I don't even think that they knew the previous identities of their client or the criminal history, which is like, great employer, Redfin. Like, you're letting right. this guy have like keys to people's houses, and he's been sued for fraud. My ex was sued for fraud because he also sold some really nice lady from Colorado like a meth house, and then she became terribly ill and had to use her life savings to like remediate it and rip out the walls and floors. I only found out about that a few years ago as well.
Well, so now I always like to say with a lot of my people, what's good for you is bad for your case, and what's bad for you is good for your case. Now, this is clearly bad for you, right? He's clearly trying to steal the house and get a commission. So that's bad for you. So it's got to be good for your case. So let me guess, the judges, once they found out about that he was trying to steal the house, they sanctioned him. They gave you the house. They ordered an Elizer to sign the deed, right? They made it all right, and everything turned out okay in the end, right?
Of course not. And there's a pretty good reason why. And I think that a big part of the insanity of my case, not only is it from a person that doesn't know who they are day to day, but my ex-husband's creep show attorney, who's like one of the world's biggest scumbags, I mean, like legitimately, has a judge brother. And so when you have an attorney with a scumbag you know, like he's a dependency court judge, I think.
Oh, God.
So, you know, stealing kids.
Right.
And these two brothers also went bankrupt in a law firm together. And I found a bunch of even bankruptcy fraud committed there. But, you know, nobody actually cares because this is, you know, the kind of stuff that the courts are really up to. The court is run by pretty much mostly run by criminals. They have a few nice people to confuse the public, but it's, you know, it's just the criminal enterprise. So then now Alex is on another item, which is so now keep in mind, at the same time that my house was sold by Max Zank trustee, now my ex-husband's attorney is going to represent Mr. Black obtained a quote. Well, is he Mr. Zank trustee or is he Mr. Black? Who is he? How could he be both of the people at the same time? Like, who am I litigating against? Your guess is as good as mine.
Right.
And in this instance, this was another funny one because I received a notice of sale. This letter pertains to some precious metals that I held, and the value was probably then in the range of $75,000. And my ex, like his dirtbag attorney, sends me this letter like, oh, so he received this offer for $39,000, and you know, like your client should just take half, or I don't even know what bullshit's in here. But what at issue was my ex-husband had stolen all of the precious metals and all of my jewelry out of my house and concealed that fact for years. It was divided in a stipulation back in 2016, but instead my ex-husband fled with my divided property to Texas. So I had no way of getting it back, but I did get a receipt in the mail that said that my property had been sold. And so it was like a notice of sale that because the coins were serialized and my ex moronically thought that you can just, you know, tender serial numbered gold coins and there would be like no notice. But I did receive a notice of sale that he had, you know,
so he's just he's just a thief. But here's this one. I don't know if this is who you were talking about, but here's a scumbag, lying dirtball lawyer named Keith Dolnick. And this is about this. Look at this. This is a bona fide offer. And this is talking about this that we just looked at, right? This is like him trying to like sell the house right out from under him, under her, and make a commission on it. But look, this is a bona fide offer. Ms. Black has argued she cannot sell the house because of litigation and other issues. Liar! It's like he can't sell the house because it belongs to her. Listen to what he's saying. Well, it's because of litigation, but this offer counters those arguments. Nope, Redfin Realty can't counter arguments. They're not party. What the hell does this even mean, right? Please let me know Ms. Black wishes to accept this offer and sell the home to Redfin. Right, so... Why, right? So that, or refinance, so that we can buy out Mr. Black's interest with a fair market value of that of $1.1 million. Okay, wait a minute. This is after they signed that a judge signed a judgment saying the house belongs to her. And he has no insurable interest. He has no interest. And that handwritten stuff about he's due an equalizer payment, we explicitly are X-ing that out. That's not a thing, right? We've got a judgment. Well, except for they won't file it. They won't file the damn judgment. And now here they come and says, well, you know, let's, you know, we're just going to sell the house right out from under you. I mean, this is just crime, folks. This is what organized crime looks like. All right. I mean, straight up, this is how to steal a house through family court, through allegedly legal means. And this is just one of 147 reasons why I say every week you have no rights and there is no law, okay? Because clearly this is against the law, but when the law becomes whatever the damn judge says, and oh, by the way, that Sarmiento, right, who signed this, a little while later, he retires. Okay, so he's not even there anymore. And that's going to lead us to the next wonderful judge that pops into the situation. And that would be a lovely gentleman that you see right here. And this guy's name is Nathan Vu. Nathan Vu. So obviously, Christie continues to try to litigate, to try to solve these problems, to try to get her damn house. There were other things. I know there was a motion to compel, which is that's when your adverse party is stonewalling discovery and they won't give you the documents that they're supposed to give you. I know she brought a motion to compel. And then it came before this Sarmiento guy, and he wouldn't hear it. He just said, oh, this motion's off calendar, the day that it finally came up. He definitely never ruled on it. So they, after he retires and Vu comes on, Christie files a motion saying, hey, let's finally hear this motion to compel. It's very important. The judge has to have the documents, all these documents, to properly rule on the issues at trial, right? And Vu promptly issues a completely bullshit ruling saying that, no, that is that's already been ruled upon and it was denied, right? And that's just false. The motion to compel was never ruled upon at whatever. And you can prove it through the transcripts, and you could absolutely prove it. But so here's what he says, however. I'm going to quote this judge, and the court, this is Judge Vu, says, so what's been occurring in the past will stop occurring. And in context, it's crystal clear that he is saying that Christie is litigating too much. She's filing too many papers. Okay, so this is going to stop occurring. And again, if you don't stop fighting in court, then what I must do is one of two things. If one parent is the one that won't stop fighting in court, then the other parent gets the kids no visitation. If you have no visitation, you have nothing to fight about. This is what he said. Or option number two, says Judge Vu, the kids are placed within the jurisdiction of Child Protective Services. They find nice foster parents for the children. Foster parents who are carefully trained, placed under strict requirements, and definitely do not fight with each other. Foster care is much better for the children than having frequent and continuing contact with both parents, right? That's what he's implying. In my opinion, says Judge Vu. So those are the options. Those are the options. I am not like other judges, says Judge Vu.
Oh, yes, he is.
And he kind of is. But folks, think about this, right? They're forcing her to keep litigating. Forcing her. I mean, what's she supposed to do? Say, yeah, steal my house? Yeah. I don't care that you won't file the damn judgment that I had to litigate for 4 years to even get. Right? What's she supposed to do? Just say, yep, just take my house? And when she tries to file papers to get the documents that she needs, right? Which you're allowed to do, right? Or file papers saying, hey, I need to file this judgment, right? This judge comes along, brand new to the case, tells lies saying, yeah, your motion was already heard when provably it was not. And then says, if you keep litigating, I'm going to take your kids away from you. For that, as punishment for that. As punishment for that. Right? This is what I wrote in my article on PMJMP. Okay? I said, that's terrifying. Supposedly, you have a right to litigate your disputes. But Judge Vu is saying in open court that if you keep litigating, he's going to order armed thugs to your house to take your children away. And that's exactly what would happen. Now, it is true that we had like a victory, you could say, in that we were able to get Judge Vu disqualified because of this. And it was a very a satisfying ruling that came down from this Judge Cowan up in Los Angeles. And who said that basically Judge Vu had no jurisdiction to make any kind of orders, that dependency court and foster care and all that's a whole different court system. So he's, as a family law judge, he just has no right to even have anything to do with that. And so that's great, right, Christy? We got this judge disqualified, and then happy days. Everything was fine after that, right?
Not a chance.
So then what happens? Who's the next clown?
Now we're in year 8 of the case.
Yeah.
And so now I get put in front of this, the ultimate, like, ancient creature, old bastard. His name is James Waltz, who is well known for placing children with sexual predators. And I have helped many of the girls who have aged out, who unfortunately were subjected to sexual assault by a male in their family. And that's who I wind up with. Now, I clearly understood that I was well known to the court, and also my support for these lovely young women who had overcome such adversity and had reunited with their siblings and parent as they aged out, or even got close to aging out and ran away. So when I got put before Waltz, I knew that I was being set up. I immediately moved to disqualify Judge Waltz. But what had happened was, when I disqualified that little bastard, Nathan Vu, who also I love to point out that he loves telling everybody that he went to Harvard and Yale, which at least the media has helped us understand what tyrants and psychopaths run those joints,
yeah,
and that they have no First Amendment rights there. So it right. makes sense that that little bastard, comes from those hideous schools. So I get put in front of James Waltz, and I move to disqualify him. But further complicating the matter, I have this supervising judge who's really the one orchestrating a lot of this in retaliation. And what she does is, when I disqualified Vu, she writes a fictitious order that I had used a peremptory challenge, which is, anybody can just say, I want a different judge one time with this, like, basic one or two page piece of paper that's called a CCP 170.6. It's like this very benign document. It could be that maybe you worked with a judge, or, oh yeah, that witch.
So you can disqualify a judge for cause, meaning there was something, you know, really bad that they did that gets them disqualified. There's a much lighter thing called a peremptory challenge, where you get one of those per case, and you can file this piece of paper. And if you do so quickly, you can disqualify the judge. But I think what Christy's saying is that this supervising judge who we're looking at right now, this Julie Palafox unit, she falsely said that Christy had disqualified the previous judge just on a peremptory challenge, when in fact we got him disqualified for cause, for acting in the complete absence of jurisdiction. And so, because she lied and said, oh, you're trying to do a peremptory challenge now, well, you can't do another one, because that is the rule. You get one of those, right? So just liars, just liars in support of organized crime. I mean, this, it's just case after case after case, right? So you do, but let's drop in, let's eavesdrop just a little bit on a hearing before Judge Waltz. Was he like 104 years old at this point? I don't know what it, but so the issue, though, is, first of all, the house, right? You know, have they actually, you know, does her ex-husband actually have any interest in the house? Which, why are they still litigating this? There's already been a judgment. Oh, by the way, there's no judgment because they just won't file it. But they're also talking now about, shouldn't all of the orders by the disqualified judge, Nathan Vu, shouldn't they all be vacated? And the answer is yes, that's what the law says is supposed to happen, right? So here's this court. This is Judge Waltz now.
Well, let's be clear. They're not vacated just because you say so. They're not vacated because Mr. Camino says otherwise. So let's be clear about that.
Well, that's not clear. Right? And it's not about somebody's opinion. It's about your honor. What the hell is the law? What's the law say?
I'm not going to do it because he says so or you say so, right?
And Christie's attorney at the time, Chris Bayou, who sadly the late Chris Bayou, but he argued the law. He presented the law. And there's plenty of law that says when a judge makes when a judge is disqualified, all of the orders made after the disqualification are null and void, and they're not orders, right? But they're going to argue. And so the Judge Waltz, again, I want to be efficient and hear this matter one more time. It's like, okay, we've been trying to get this stipulation done for freaking 5 years at this point. Oh, but I want to be efficient. Yeah, we've already had one retirement, and now we're about to have another one. I'm really glad it's efficient, right? It's so based on this new information, I'm inviting you to amend your pleadings. Yeah, that's efficient, all right. To present this argument, and we'll risk schedule the hearing without any substantial delay. I guess it's, you know, they signed this damn thing in June of 2016. I guess that's not a substantial delay. Within 2 or 3 weeks or 5 or 10 or 100 years, I don't know, I'll be dead. It doesn't matter from today or whatever is reasonable between the lawyers.
Yes. And then we have statute of frauds, right? Like, at a minimum, I had an agreement where my ex-husband, so he was, my ex-husband applies the concept of whatever is his, and whatever is mine is also his.
Yeah.
Because he took everything that was in the stipulated agreement and sold it or whatever the hell he did with it, and he kept it. But then he also took everything that was divided, that was mine, that he could actually physically steal and flee the state with, the anchor being my house. So now, mind you, if my house had gone down in value, there would be precisely no relief for me to go to him and ask for like a, you know, an equalization payment because my house had negative equity. It was this demand that I be left with nothing.
Yeah.
And now it's still ongoing.
And it's still ongoing. I know you've been at it for a decade. So have I in my situation. This you're looking at here, a very recently filed petition for review to the California Supreme Court, basically saying, something ain't right here, and you actually, oh ruler over me, have the power by virtue of your holy hand to fix this. Please, please, I beg you, please let me have my house. Please get these people out of my damn life. We shall see. Thank you very much, Christy. Once again, pleasure as always. Folks,
everybody living in a cage as the world keeps on.
What does this say to you? Okay, what does this story mean?
Lives are breaking.
And can you even hear part of this without realizing there's something extremely, extremely wrong here?
We fell in love with the money. The story. We fell asleep at the wheel and we didn't wake up. We thought we were so righteous. courageous. We thought we were courageous. We thought we were so tough, but push came to shove, and we didn't love, and we didn't love. Freedom enough.
As always, do you? Do you love freedom enough? To really see the truth of what's going on here.
Freedom enough.
This court system, it's an organized crime racket. That's what it is. It's what it was set up to be. Okay, we're trying our best. If there's gonna be a fix, it's gotta be in the court of public opinion and the court of law. We can shame and embarrass these crooks, but only if we all just kind of open our eyes, stand up, and stop being afraid. We can do it. We'll check you next time, all right? Take care.